Hi everyone, you're welcome to the Swingin' Blues. No, this is the Agriculture Show. Jeez, I'm just
the Agriculture Show.
I'm just all such a great show reception of your. I just love to listen to Schwarzenegger stories. That was great.
That's right. You can be on the Joking Island. Just give us the Wonder Island.
I'm still agog by it all. So, folks, we'll start our show here. It's the Agriculture Show here on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM, and we'll start off with a nice kind of a country tune, and we'll be right back.
This is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Mobilizing the youth of today, educating them in a better way, training so they won't go astray. Hear what me say, yeah. Keep your head to clearer thinking. Loyal heart, got to be persevering. To the larger service, make your hands willing. Your health for better living.
4-H.
For community and country.
4-H.
Respond to food security.
4-H.
I gotta make the best better. Let us get together.
4-H.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's your host, Jeff Steger, for the Agriculture Show. Today, I have the delight to have Barclay Knapp with us again. And Barclay, it is a tad colder than it was last week at this time.
I think it was actually a thaw last week we had.
Well, we certainly got a blast of what we have more typical winter would be in Ontario. I think it's going to, I understand by Sunday, it's to be above freezing again.
It's just strange weather. It didn't used to be up and down as quite as much as this, but you almost have to have two different types of thicknesses of winter jackets.
Layering, that's the Canadian secret, I think, isn't it?
Well, that too, yes.
Yes. So when I drove in today, I noticed that there's a bit of, there's such strong wind that fields that were plowed and open, there's drifting dirt and mud around all over the place, and I guess your thoughts are turning to your garden too as you get ready for next year, for this year's crop.
Well, the seed catalogs are, yes. have been, you know, received in the mail and going through it and just checking to see, you know, what seeds I have to get from where, because not everyone sells the same seeds.
So today, I'm glad you're in again. We're going to cover a couple of different topics, I think. We'll certainly talk about your unique and special perspective as a young farmer, involved with the community in terms of, we first met through junior farmers, and as our listeners heard last week, you're busy developing, further developing your, what may become your job. What the name you decided, I just want to say herbs and spices, but we had that discussion afterwards. What, any more thoughts on your marketing angle?
Well, herbs and produce kind of the focus.
Yeah.
Herbs, you know, something that I think is an untouched market that I'm working on. And I'm actually pretty good at it. And produce and the fact that I am trying to teach myself about growing what's called world crops. So basically are non-traditional vegetables and such that our large ethnic population, you know, may import from their traditional homelands, but that we traditionally don't grow here because we're used to the Western European diet.
Okay, well, let's do that in our first segment. We'll play a few more songs. It's the Agriculture Show, and my guest today is Barclay Knapp, and we're going to talk a little bit about what he's up to, and I have a topic that popped up in my on my internet this week, and I just thought we'd speak to it a bit. It's about an activist who has changed his mind or his attitude towards the environmental movement and industrial agriculture, for lack of a different name. Mark Linus is his name, an English guy. So with those two topics in mind, stay dialed in here and stay warm. And this is the Agriculture Show, and you're listening to episode number 36 here on January the 22nd.
When I told a man way up in Dungeon, way up in Dundee, when I used to go down to the power store place, he got all the buck over you need. Well, now the reason I love that old buck on the phone so well, now the reason I love that old buck on the phone so well. Well, now we always have money, and we never raise no hell. Well, I'm leaving this morning, sure do hate to go. Yeah, man. Lord, I'm leaving this morning, and I sure do hate to go. Well, now I've got to leave this buck on the phone.
ain't coming back here no more. Yeah, come back. Play that one.
Hi, I'm Courtney Connors, 2011-2012 Ontario Queen of the Furrow. You are listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
We're back, folks, and we've had a few tunes there. That was the Burr Clover. Let me just check that I'll get this right here. It's the Burr Clover Farm, and the Otters was Muddy Waters. So that's a real good basic old country music, this lovely song. And the first song was I'm Gonna Sell the Farm by a Canadian songwriter. And I should have this written down. Oh, Lazy Mike and the... No. Yeah, Lazy Mike and the Rockin' Rockers. So we'll play a few more tunes today. Hopefully I'll have a bit more lined up better than that. So, folks, we're back. And... just chatting with Barkley here, just to go over some of the things we talked about since our last show. And Barkley, you had mentioned a little bit about you had gone to the Farm Smart conference, and you were commenting on what kind of things farmers do in the wintertime when it's so cold like this. So I guess they kind of tie together.
Well, yeah, we have time for conferences now. You can't harvest or plant a whole lot. Those who do have livestock do have to take care of them like they do every other day of the year. Farm Smart, though, this past Saturday at the University of Guelph, it actually had to make use of some of the surrounding classrooms outside of the main Rozanski Hall that usually they have them in. It keeps growing every year.
Yeah, I saw that. There was a Corn Smart conference over at Arcal, and there was one thing about livestock at another location.
Yeah, I think that was in Aberfoyle. Yeah, that was on the Friday before. So they were just experimenting with other sessions as well with different topics that were a little more specific, such as corn and beef, just because they couldn't fit them in all on one day and the Saturday. I don't know too much about them, but they were talking positively about them on Saturday.
Yeah.
And I think they said they had their highest amount of attendees to date, and it's going on 15 years, so they had well over 1,000 people. And the rumor was they're talking about perhaps making it a two-day conference next year.
So that's good news for that, and I know you mentioned hadn't brought along any notes with you, but what comes to mind of a couple of topics there that you think
that's good news for that, and
I know some of the topics they had, and for those who aren't familiar with it, it's kind of a jigsaw conference kind of format. So you have about 10 to 6 different classrooms with different speakers in them and different topics every hour. I know I went to one that was basically a fellow who was working for Penner Dairy Systems up in Terre, Ontario, who had lived in Europe and Canada and been traveling throughout the U.S. and basically talking about the differences in the dairy styles on the farms and all in Ontario, mostly Ontario, Quebec, United States, and Europe. And he has slideshow to match with that. And I know later on there was a similar discussion, but with how sheep are raised differently in Europe and Canada.
So that's one you really liked then, I think, right? You thought that was pretty good?
I like seeing the comparative, you know, comparative structures and the comparative markets, more or less. Now that the quota system in the United or the European Union is being dissolved, how they farm is going to greatly change, and they're going to be greatly, you know, more interested in their bottom line. But really interesting in the architecture and the fact that, you know, they don't have to deal with as harsh as winter as we do in Ontario. So how they house their animals and care for their animals is a lot different. And that's really interesting to see, you know, how technology and science, you know, and animal husbandry has progressed in different areas.
Yeah, and, you know, it'd be fun to have a little tour down to New Zealand. That's year-round dairying, probably the most inexpensive milk production in the world, but unfortunately the farthest away from the market. So they have a huge advantage in one thing and a huge disadvantage in the other. So, boy, a trip around the world would see a lot. It just may come to mind. I probably got my pile of newspapers on the table. Oh, it's on the truck, likely. So this was a trade magazine, and the front cover showed a whole bunch of white cattle, droopy-eared, with palm trees growing in the back. So I thought I'd read this story. So this is a farmer down in Arizona. He grows, 11 or 12 crops of alfalfa a year because it's the flood irrigation. So, you know, he diverts the Colorado River in there and floods his field twice, grows alfalfa in 30 days, and then cuts it and puts another crop in. Just
really? Yeah, 30 days?
Yeah. It's just because it's just all year round perfect weather for growing alfalfa. Now, a little hotter in the wintertime. He did say that, you know, you get the better quality hay. Like, so just for our listeners to know, this is when the weather's really hot and dry, alfalfa plants tend to have more lignin in their stalks and structures, and this lignin is not as digestible. So for premium or optimum milk production, you want very digestible proteins and other plant structures, and so that's the winter alfalfa in the case of Arizona. And then, of course, in Ontario here, we have no alfalfa in the wintertime, and I think it's a good year to get four crops a year. Three would be pretty good, but there's been years there's only been two good crops of alfalfa, like last year. Very dry.
No, that's interesting. This is the differences in how agriculture happens across the world. It's interesting the different conditions you have or don't have and how you have to adapt.
Yeah. So anything also, like Guelph, was there any other conference? I know you had mentioned about the dairy guy last week. Was there another?
There was tons. There was updated research on the University of Guelph's trials with soybeans and corn and wheat.
Yeah. So which one did you go to?
I actually didn't go to those ones.
Okay. Which ones did you go to then, besides the dairy one? What's there?
My mind's drawing a blank.
Oh, that's okay. But you went to some other ones, right? That wasn't just...
Yes, yeah. I went... I think I went to one every hour, so I think about six.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
They do have a session at lunchtime where you have a choice going in one of the two classrooms for two guest speakers.
Yeah.
They had a speaker from Kansas State University talking about how farmers, what they're going to have to do with genetics of their feed and livestock in order to feed the world by 2050 when the world is drastically supposed to increase in its population. And the speaker that I went to was a fellow from McGill University who heads up a research department basically trying to debunk the myths about food and consumer products. And he has a radio show in Montreal, I believe. He was a bilingual fellow. He was quite on the ball with all the myths that are out there in regards to food. And basically understanding, you know, that science has to prove one way or another. You can't just, you know, start a rumor about something and assume that's true about all your food. You have to realize that, you know, science can determine a lot of things.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. That's going to segue quite well into our second segment here, when I've got a topic to bring up. And for all of you listening online, if you want to look up a guy by the name of Mark Linus. So Mark, MarkLynas. And that's what his contention is, that to look at the science of agriculture. So you enjoyed that conference you were at. And you know what? I just browsed the webpage for the conference. And I think I know what that guy's... I saw that guy's name here that you just referred to. So you enjoyed that speaker. He was more of like a generalist. He kind of looked over the whole
Yeah, basically saying what we're doing to kind of to counteract with all this misunderstanding.
Is it Joe Schwartz?
Yes.
Okay, got it. I got him right here, yeah.
Very, very, very good speaking fellow. I would have loved the guns. Also heard the fellow from Kansas State University as well. Unfortunately, you can only be in one place at a time.
So Joe Schwartz, I'll just read a short bit here. George McGill University, he's in the Office for Science and Society. And Joe Schwartz is well known for his informative and entertaining public lectures on topics ranging from the chemistry of love to the science of aging. Professor Schwartz has received numerous awards for teaching chemistry and for interpreting science for the public, and that is the only non-American ever to win an American Chemical Society's prestigious Grady Stack Award for demystifying chemistry. Now, there's the key, isn't it? You know, there's lots of stuff out there, but it's wonderful to have those people who can interpret those and get the message across to an informed and interested public.
Yeah, and it's also, you can do just about any kind of manipulation of statistics, but it's going through all the studies and the research and actually finding out, you know, what is actually, you know, truth and what has actually been manipulated. And so they do go through a lot of studies and a lot of research that's been published, and basically trying to weigh through, you know, what's actually fact and what has yet to be proven and what perhaps was meddled with. So he does some good work, and it's good to know that there's someone out there that's trying to, you know, let the truth be through.
So what else did you listen? Did you remember some of the other ones since we've been talking, the other lectures you went to? That Joe Schwartz was probably the opening speaker, I would think. Mentioned a guy from Kansas State,
yeah.
Bob Weber, does that ring a bell?
I think so, yes.
Okay, because there's a Rita Emmett here, Sean Castile, and Frank Gibbs, and a bunch more, Willie Hoot, and oh gosh, Joseph Lauer.
Well, they say if you're a half an hour from home, you're an expert wherever you're speaking.
Yeah, that's a colloquialism I've heard before. So Bob Weber, he's a cow-calf extension specialist, and so he's been at University of Missouri for his career, and there's a list of stuff you can't, just huge along here. What was he talking about?
Basically, my understanding was...
But he's not one you went to?
No,
which ones did you go to? Then we'll cut that stuff.
Well, I'm just looking here back on the registration page I found on my phone.
Perfect.
there was a researcher from the Ministry of Agriculture and Food who talked about drought effects on pasture. This past year, with the lack of rain and excessive or above normal heat amount that we had, really did a number to crops as well as the pasture. I know that forcing some grasses to die and other grasses, they would just bolt and go to seed, therefore not putting any energy into production of the leaves, which is a lot more tastier and nutritious for livestock to eat. The stock, you know, is a little more fibrous, but, you know, you do need the protein and the carbohydrates and such, like the not-so-heavy starches like the stocks, in order to cattle to, you know, fatten up for the winter or to, you know, help with the reproduction that's going on inside of them.
So you were at this lecture, you know, how did a crops guy like you get involved in this cattle business like that?
Well, growing up on a dairy farm, you know, cattle was part of your life, milking them twice a day or helping milk at least once a day, but they had to get milk twice a day. And that was how the farm made money. And that's, you know, basically the house was, you know, 200 feet away. So there was always something going on in the barn, and, you know, that's how my parents raised the family.
So was it nostalgia or sentimentality that took you to that lecture?
Well, I'm always interested in what's out there. What can be done better? Currently, my parents have switched to beef, less labor intensive, as they're winding down in their years and getting older. And it's interesting to know, because we do have a lot of beef producers in Ontario, and I believe Bruce County is number one beef producing county right now in Ontario. And everyone loves beef. Everyone loves firing up the barbecue in the summertime and throwing that T-bone steak on. But it's a lot of science in how do you maintain the land and how do you make the land work for you and keep the land that you're grazing these livestock on healthy. and so that recovers faster again. And one of those sciences or technologies is rotating the pasture, or rotating the grazing. So some may say, you know, you put them on a patch of pasture for a week. Some may say a couple of days and on to the next. It's to promote intensive grazing, but you know that when that pasture, part of that pasture is recovered, the rest of the pasture is recovered. And it's a lot more of a science than just putting them out there and letting them trample everything, you know, down. The roots do need some recovery time, and plants do too. And, you know, luckily, you know, the different grasses, you know, they all help with the diet of a livestock animal or a ruminant.
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly have kept up to date on some of the management of grasses and forages for cattle and the implications of weather, and so that's great. I'm glad. So I'm hearing you had a great time at the conference. You learned a lot. Maybe we can cover off just a few things as well. You're still busy with Junior Farmers. What's next on their agenda? We'll just give them a short 5 seconds here to let our listeners know what's going on with the Waterloo Junior Farmers.
Well, the Waterloo Junior Farmers meet the first Sunday of every month at 2 o'clock at the meeting room in the old New Hamburg Arena. Anyone is welcome, especially those youth that are aged 15 to 29. You do not have to be from a farm. The Junior Farmer name is part of the history of it. We're basically, it's a rural youth leadership and volunteer development program where your youth are basically acting as like an Optimist Club or a Kiwanis Club, working for the community. But the big thing is that they're learning about themselves. They're developing themselves to be, you know, the next leaders and the next volunteers in our communities.
So they're meeting this Sunday, first Sunday of the month. Right?
First Sunday every month.
Yep.
I do believe that there's a social coming up this Sunday. Okay. So a little social event, probably a social rec games night.
Are you guys still doing the square dance night again?
That hasn't been talked about right now.
Okay.
We did have a good one back, I think it was January 2nd or January 3rd.
January 3rd would be a Thursday night, I remember. Yeah.
So that was a Thursday night, same night as Waterloo Federation meeting.
Yes, I remember.
Basically, that was a chance to have the community come out and teach the community about square dancing as one of the community projects the club was doing.
And just to wrap up a little bit more on that, we just touched on briefly, you're still working away at herbs and produce. And probably have you driven by your garden space recently to see the snow blowing around and imagining what'll be there next year? Are you sentimental that way?
I'm out there probably once a week to look at it. Neighbors like to walk through it, taking their dogs for a walk and such. You know, and, you know, seeing the plants and such, and they appreciate what I'm doing. Actually, what I have been doing is just yesterday I was looking through seed catalogs for where I can source myself for different varieties of okra. So my main seed company, Ontario Seed Company, has one variety, and the other varieties that I'm going to be experimenting with, I'm looking at going to have to purchase from other companies as well.
Hmm. Okay, well, that's good news. Boy, we're halfway through our show already here, Barkley, so let's play a song, and we'll be back in our second half and talk some more about agriculture. And thanks for coming and listening about today, folks. It's the Agriculture Show, and episode 36, and we are on January 22nd of the year 2013. It's your host, Jeff Steger, and with me today as guest is Barkley Knapp. We'll see you soon.
Dusty old farmer, out working your field, hanging down over your tractor wheel. The sun beating down turned the red paint to orange, and rusty old patches of steel. There's no farmer songs on that car radio, just cowboys, truck drivers, and pain. Well, this is my way to say thanks for the meal, and I hope there's no shortage of rain. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, my fits like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, mopping the face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you. The combines gang up, take most of the bread. Things just ain't like they used to be. Though your kids are out after the American dream, and they're working in big factories. If I come by when you're out in the sun, can I wave at you just like a friend? These days when everyone's taking so much, there's somebody giving back in. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, mopping the face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you. Straw hat and old dirty hankies, mopping the face like a shoe. Thanks for the meal, here's a song that is real, from a kid from the city to you.
Gord Grant here, and you're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Sound FM 100.3 on your dial, or maybe channel 946 on your Rogers digital cable, or perhaps streaming live from www.soundfm.ca.
Well, we're back, folks. Little stuff to do between our sets here, our segments, and welcome back, Barclay. Glad you're here today. Well, it's a cold and frosty one, and so I guess we'll see a lot of the seasons go by in the next few months, and we'll be soon talking about springtime, and grass will be greening up. It won't be long. I already noticed something about you. Do you notice how the day lengths are so much longer now? 4:45 is sunsets. Very invigorating. I think I'm waking up from my winter slumber.
I haven't quite noticed it yet, but I'm sure it's coming. I'm sure I will.
Okay, and so we'll this move into our second segment here, and I have a topic here that came up on over this last week or two. It intrigues me to speak about a little bit and get a quick look at this, Barclay. And I think for our listeners, I'll just read the first poem. I got a one pager here, and I'll just read the first paragraph, and we'll start into some of these topics. This author's talking about it. For those who want to listen along, who are listening today. Mark Linus, put that in Google, Mark, M-A-R-K, L-Y-N-A-S. Here we go. For years, British environmental activist Mark Linus destroyed genetically modified food, GMO crops, in what he called a successful campaign to force the business of agriculture to be more holistic and ecological in its practices. His targets were companies like Monsanto and Syngenta, leaders in developing genetically modified crops. Earlier this month, he went in front of the world to reverse his position on GMOs. At the Oxford Farm Conference in Britain, Linus apologized for helping to, as he says, to start the anti-GMO movement, and told his former allies to get out of the way and let the rest of us get on with the feeding the world sustainably. And so this has made quite the round. It has been everywhere. I actually originally listened to this one on CBC, and so I actually had to download their podcast to have listened to it, and wow, numerous things on TV. So, Barclay, that's quite a thing when someone who has changed their opinion one from one to the other must be It's always unique when someone who's was a strong supporter one way or the other switches to the other side. It makes the headlines. I guess it's not unusual. Eh? You've probably known people who've or situations required a rethinking.
Well, he's obviously had a revelation, or he's looked at the data a lot seriously, or someone's put things in perspective for him. Can happen to anyone. You even in politics, you know one party's better than the other, and you might have a close encounter that leaves you bitter with one party or more enriched with one party.
No, that's true. You know, like it. Part of living and growing is to be ready to say, you know, this belief I had does not needs to be updated. I missed something, or new information has come along, and it's important to be flexible. There's no value in being hard and dead fast on a course that may be correct, but not. You can't. You know, it's supposed to be flexible. So it's good to see this kind of change, I think.
No, it takes a big person to admit that they're wrong, and to admit that he was wrong to a large group of agriculturalists at such a conference in the UK, that could have, you know, done a huge tarnish to his ego, to his business partners, could have a huge backlash against him. But, you know, he felt with his conscience that he had to try to set things on a better path.
Yeah, I think he just, I don't know. I guess he said he is wrong. It doesn't need to be quite that much. He just had a chance to re-examine his situation, his beliefs.
Well, looking at Wikipedia about him, the books that he's read or he's written, the topic is more or less about the damage being done and to our planet and how to save the planet.
Yeah, what's that book he just came out with? Saving Mother Earth or something? Or it was the last 2 years. He's got quite a bit in there.
The God Species, Saving the Planet in the Age of Humans. That came out in 2011.
Yeah.
So he's looking at a big picture of the planet as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, there's so many little things that happen on the planet that are all affecting it, in his focus is environmentally. And, you know, the Earth is heating up, obviously, you know, the greenhouse effect and such. Though naturally the Earth has gone through multiple hot and cold cycles throughout its existence. Hence, you know, they find petrified trees that only belong in the jungle up in Baffin Island in the Arctic.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have remnants of glaciers that have gone all the way down to almost southern U.S.
So just a little bit further with Mark Linus, there's three items in here that were posted on this particular website, and I think the first one probably sums up how he changed what he believes in. And this thing is titled on quote-unquote discovering science. When I started off as an anti-GMO activist, it was very much an ideological position. I was scared of the new technology, you know, and it just seemed to be messing with the basic building blocks of life. But what happened in the sort of 10 to 15 years since then is that I have written a couple of books on climate change, which, as you mentioned there, the God Species. I have written a couple of books on climate change, and I really fell in love with the scientific method as a way of establishing knowledge about the world. It eventually dawned on me that I was actually being anti-science in the way I was talking about GMOs, and that there are many ways a stronger scientific consensus on the safety of GMOs than there is about the reality of climate change. So he observed within his own belief system and that of his perception of his fellow activists that it was inconsistent to apply science to climate change and not to apply it to GMOs. So I think that sums up pretty well part of what Mark is saying. And I think you mentioned that too when we first were introducing this, that the science behind it.
Yeah. So how else can you come to conclusions without, you know, accurately knowing the results?
Mm-hmm. Now he does mention here
trial and error is what, you know, how we humans learn.
Now he does recognize where that concern came from, and I'll just re-say it again. I was scared of the new technology. You know, it just seemed to be messing with the basic building blocks of life. And so that maybe reflects a very accurate thing, is that the GMO is so new that it makes people uncomfortable. And I think we've all been in that place and done that. the good news is, as information gets out there, we can reassess our views. But the bad news is, it's easy to become pretty dogmatic and stuck in your belief system. So, I thought that was quite insightful when Mark had said this to his listeners at that conference.
One thing I just thought of is GMOs, they're helping actually to protect some of the earth as well. You're getting more food per acre pretty much. And if we were to not use GMOs and to feed, what is it, about 8 billion people that's supposed to populate this planet by 2050, where are you supposed to get the land to get a yield that's pre-GMO or not GMO? You would actually have to take a lot of the earth's resources, such as parkland, wetland, jungles, rainforests, and put them in the agriculture. There would just be no way to feed those 8 billion people by 2050.
Did you see that story this last week where it's estimated over half of the food produced in the world is wasted, whether on poor storage, bad yields, or poor all those sorts of things? It's unbelievable, isn't it? My goodness. And even in North America, apparently, 25% of the food that is hot and steaming and ready to eat on a table, whether it's a restaurant or a home, is thrown out. So it goes a long way to feeding the world if we had a little bit better, if we looked after better after what we did do. It doesn't take away what you're saying, that we need science and we need to be prepared to produce more and more and all the time. Just want to add another one here to what some of Mark's stuff here, and you maybe have heard of this one, and this is titled On the Saga of Golden Rice. So one of the case studies that really changed my mind about this, that being GMO, was the saga of golden rice, which was developed to be a vitamin A enhanced, and because of something like a quarter of a million children per year die from vitamin A deficiencies in developing countries, particularly in South Asia. So Greenpeace has been waging a campaign to stop this rice from ever being developed. Mark observes, you can make a pretty strong case that tens of thousands of children have died because they were denied access to this purely because it's GM, and there is an ideological bias against that. And so he kind of called it pretty close there that it may be almost immoral not to have GMO when it can relieve an easily mitigated problem, which is vitamin A, just have the plants grow more of it. So. Did I tell you last year? We talked last week about the whole potato thing, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
So there's another thing too. Just a quick review. So a major grower in North America had the option to use GMO, but did not because of public sentiment about GMOs, and they went back to using organophosphates to control bugs. And organophosphates are a dangerous compound. So. So Mark throws in an extra little bit there about there's some moral issues too with GMO gives us a way to bring in healthy foods, different foods, and to be against GMOs just because it's ideological is pretty questionable. Can be thought as a pretty questionable. Now I don't think Mark any of this stuff is like all the issues that he previously brought up. I believe they're all worth investigating. I think that's the issue, not to stop. It's just not to be quite as dogmatic or hard-hearted about it. What would you describe it like? Just like a dog on a bone type approach? I'm reading this. He wants to see a bit more moderation in discussion.
Well, especially with anything to do with patents involved, and unfortunately there are them with GMOs,
yes,
seeds. You want to take any of the financing, the studies away from those companies. Anyone that has benefits or anti-benefits to get out of the results, and put it into someone who is unbiased and can provide a clear and thorough study of it. How long that study may be, or how expensive that study may be.
Now, there's an interesting part about it, and I agree with that, or I would like to know more about it. And that is that. What are the implications of the patenting of these genetics in the sense that this takes away the public interest? Well, I mean, normally universities can investigate these things and do their own research, but I don't think at the moment universities are allowed to have that material. It's still property of the the large companies, the Dows, the Syngentas, and the Monsantos. So that's an interesting ethical argument and to do with law, and boy, I'd love to have a guest in to talk about that a little bit, but that's a good point that it would be nice if it was more of it was in the public property.
Well, of course, you know, access to you know, say a private, you know, grower, someone like yourself or myself who actually wants to see the yield difference and have a comparative plot on their own without having to sign a waiver that they'll hand back any seeds unused, or that they won't try to breed next year's seeds and plant next year's seeds with a hybrid.
Yeah, there'd be. I wish there was a halfway in between. Like clearly, as a company, they need to be able to protect their investment and make money, and that's the way it is. But it is only a shame if it restricts the public investigation of it through public, which are typically universities and those types of things. So. Well, we're getting close to the show here. We want to do a little outro a little bit. I just want to finish off with the last point from this article, and we'll talk very, very briefly on it then. This is Mark, and the title is titled On Admitting Fallibility. I would be the first one to say that having been wrong before, I'm not infallible now. For me, it's important to look at what the mainstream science is saying. We need to get on with developing more biotech crops because they can potentially be an enormous boon environmentally, and I think that is a message that has been lost in this debate so far, and I'm sure there's been a lot of messages lost in this debate. Good, honest discussion about real issues that there are with GMOs are getting lost in this polarization, not listening to the other's parts, and it's significant that a former member of he self-described himself as an environmental activist. I bet you're out there somewhere. There's somebody who's probably from the other side. I know, but someone who's in industry has comes out and says, "I've changed my mind. Now I'm an activist." That would be quite unique, wouldn't it?
That would be pretty wild. Yes.
That would be. But no doubt, there's people out there, and I haven't heard anybody like that. And who knows? But still, you get the point of what it's saying there. So Mark is saying here, you know, I made a mistake before, and now I think there's a place for biotech crops. So that's interesting stuff there, isn't it? You know, been in the middle to change gears and say, you know, let's not just get to back up in the corner with our ideas, and let's discuss this a bit. Use a scientific method. Or be consistent. If you can use a scientific method one thing, use it on another.
Judge everything on the same level anyways. Give it all a fair playing field.
Because there are things in life that, you know, you do measure on. How does it make me feel? What's my first impression? And you know, that goes with things like, shall I buy the blue pants or the green pants or something? Because it elicits certain feeling. I mean, it's a pair of pants, right? Who cares what color they are, theoretically? Yeah. But you buy something on a personal preference of some sort. And there certainly is that element on our food supply. And you know, fellas, people like yourself who are creating a niche market, we're so lucky to have people like what you're doing around doing what you're doing, because we have choice. What a luxury we have in this country that we have choice. They can choose to go to you and buy, for whatever reason, that makes sense to them. But we have other choice, where you can go to the grocery store and buy this stuff that's imported from Mexico and flown in overnight. You know, it's okay. We don't need to say one's worse than the other, but we have choice. We're very lucky. So, okay. Listen, we're moving right along here. It is just about 3 o'clock. I want to have time just to do a bit of an outro afterwards. So let's play another song, and we'll see you back later, folks, in about 2 or 3 minutes.
Will you be my honey?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
I'm your little bee.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Will you be my honey? I'll buzz, buzz, buzz till you belong to me.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Why do bees like roses?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
It's so plain to see.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
You're sweeter than the roses. You're my honey, you're the one for me. Now the cows in the field go moo, 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 and the wise old owl says woo. Like dove in a tree, I'll bill and coo, and I'll keep right after you.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Will you be my honey?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
I'm your little bee.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Will you be my honey? I'll buzz, buzz, buzz till you belong to me.
Or will you be my honey?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
I'm your little bee.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Or will you be my honey? I'll buzz, buzz, buzz. You belong to me.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Why do bees like roses?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
It's so plain to see.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
You're sweeter than the roses. You're my honey. You're the one for me.
Cows in the field go moo, moo, moo. And the wise old owl says woo. Like a dove in a tree, I'll bill and coo. And I'll keep right after you.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
How will you be my honey?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
I'm your little bee.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
How will you be my honey? I'll buzz, buzz, buzz till you belong to me.
Hi, this is Angie Koch. You're listening to CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Okay, folks, welcome back. And today's episode is episode number 36 of the Agriculture Show. Your host is Jeff Steger, and with me is Barclay Knapp. So, Barclay, we have covered a lot of stuff today. I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed the Farm Smart Conference and that you're got junior farmers all up to speed and doing well, I think, anyway. Sometimes you scratch your head about, you know, right? What are those guys doing? And you're anticipating your next season with your herbs and produce operation. And you're so busy. What else would you like to be doing this year coming up? Any other projects come to mind? More conferences?
Yeah, there's actually some shows and conferences coming up. There's an innovative farmers conference they have in London, I believe at the Holiday Inn or such, February 26th and 27th. And beginning of February, the first weekend is the University of Guelph's hosting the Guelph Organic Conference.
Oh, yes.
Which I'll probably drop in for a day or two to learn the different methods there.
Are you thinking about going organic by any chance in your operation, or where are you sitting there in that?
Well, it's... there's a lot more produce sessions there than there are other farm conferences.
Yeah.
It's also, I find it interesting the fact that organic's not new. They mm-hmm. talk about it like it's new, but it's basically how we all used to farm before we got more intensive in farming
yep.
and trying to supply better yields.
Like, I think a big part of organic is that it's local and
yes.
you know the grower. Like, you know, I know in my operation, I don't qualify for organic designation, but it's curious to me how actually I fit 85 to 90% of the definition of organic, and I think there's a niche in there, and I do sell some produce, not a lot, so it's certainly, that's why I asked the question, basically, that mm-hmm. there's still a lot of, you don't have to be organic. It's nice to have a certification for people who really specifically want organic, but a lot of the benefits of organic you can capture with an operation that isn't strictly organic.
There's actually, I would say, about half of the yep. attendees at the Guelph Organics Conference are actually consumers, not producers.
Yeah.
So they're wanting to learn more about their food, and that's particularly interesting because of the fact that we, as a society, you know, first world society, have gotten so far removed from our food production.
Mm-hmm.
We don't actually know what goes on with the food. Just shows up at the supermarket.
Yep.
Well, what all went into it? So it's really interesting, the people that actually are trying to learn what's been lost, you know, they didn't in the knowledge of food production.
Mm-hmm.
There's also coming up a couple of farm shows, if you like equipment. They're mostly farm equipment and booths with seed companies and such that are selling their products. Toronto Farm Show at the airport, February 5th and 7th. And yeah. the London Farm Show, March 6th to 8th.
Yeah, I need. I think I've been down to Toronto this year. There happens to be a meeting, for agriculture meeting down in Toronto the same couple of that same week. So I think maybe I'll try to get both shows in. We'll see how that goes. So those are usually pretty good shows. Depending on the advertiser, there's always something hot that's fun. Last year, I think, no, it was 2 years ago, it was just like solar cells all over the place. That mm-hmm. was the biggest rage going on, to put a solar cell on your farm or solar panels.
I know it's great for families too. You know, the parents can talk to the different salesmen about, you know, potentially interested in, you know, upgrading our tractor or switching, you know, seed companies or feed companies. The kids also too, you know, they also get to climb over the tractors and you know, play with the different toys that, you know, might be on display there. Though it is a lot of walking, and it's a lot of businesses. And if you want, you know, the idea of what's going on in agriculture, such as there could be a new thing, you know, a new company selling their new technologies in milking cows or in fencing hogs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real opportunity to get face-to-face with what's going on in the industry and who's selling what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's a great opportunity, like, as you say, nothing like having the salesperson there just to kind of ask a question in your own words and see what you get back from it. And, well, for the really diligent shopper, as in most trade shows, and whether you're at the local home show in town or whether the farmers are out at their show with, as Markley just talked about, with Toronto, yeah, oftentimes there's people selling the same product and you can compare prices. And what? How more convenient in one spot like that? You could say, well, what does it cost? What's the yield per unit of this, and what that sort of, those sort of questions, and service questions, and all that neat stuff. You could certainly spend a day down there keeping the salesman busy, and if you're lucky, you'll be able to get a hot dog or a hamburger out of it too,
or a free pen.
Yeah, a free pen or a hat.
Yeah, no, hats are good too.
Everybody needs more hats.
Yes,
I got a disgusting collection of hats at my place. I don't know, over the years. A little bit of everything.
You know what my parents do with all the excessive hats they get from salesmen?
Mm-hmm. What?
Once in a while, when they head down to Cuba, they take a box full of hats with them and hand them out to the inhabitants down in Cuba.
Yeah. They must wonder what they're doing with the hat that talks about something they have no idea about, I guess, but it's a hoot, isn't it? Oh, my. So, are you going to the Toronto show, do you think, or are you going to London? Are you?
I'm not sure. I'll like to go to London. I know the London show is growing,
mm-hmm.
and I know it's getting more interest in different dealers in the area in Western Ontario. So I may go to London. Toronto's not that far off from here either. We're kind of halfway in between both, I guess, being here in Kitchener-Waterloo. But it's all how the time is in the middle of the week, you know, whether you can fit it in your schedule and, you know, you want what traffic you want to handle any as well.
Yeah.
So it'll be a game time decision, I guess.
And game time, then let's see, the hockey's back playing again. Did you watch hockey on Saturday night?
I did Saturday afternoon, Sunday as well. It's
holy
a novelty.
Smokes.
It's a novelty seeing it on TV again now. The TV suddenly went on. So
yeah.
The TV hasn't been on much more for news and football this winter.
Well, whether you love it or hate it, there certainly was a lot of coverage. I know on the radio and other spots, they talked about how big the crowd was outside ACC in Toronto and the kind of promotional things that were going on. So well, they'll have to really hustle along. It's half a season, isn't it? Is it less than that?
It's less than half
a
season.
Like it's going till July this year or something? No, did I hear that right? Because it's usually June when the playoffs are done, finally.
I can't see them going that late because, you go through the playoffs, all the grinding and banging, and you don't have much recovery to when training camp starts at the end of August, beginning of September.
Of course, it doesn't matter for you and I because we'd be out in the field at that time trying to get our own crops in.
Yeah.
I know I spent lots of times in the month of May either operating machinery and planting crops or watching hockey games, and that's about it for a whole month. If the weather's good, you got to keep going.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, the ground and the livestock don't wait for you.
So we'll just maybe get to the end of our show here now. We did talk in the second segment a little bit about the British environmentalist Mark Lynas and his view on GMO foods, and consistent with what you had mentioned in your first part there about the science versus ideological type reasons. We don't want to disparage, you know, the beauty of living here in Ontario is that you can buy whatever you want under whatever beliefs you want, and that's a luxury and a privilege you have. If you believe a certain product is better than the other, then thankfully people like yourself can produce the local product, local food, with the local producer and someone they know, or if you wish that for certain products you're okay with store-bought stuff, that's fine too, and you'll just be okay. So I think Mark Lynas's change illustrates the traps you get into when you say, well, you know, all biotech is evil, or conversely, the industry or people in the industry suggest that, you know, organic and local is unrealistic. And I know from our federation standpoint and the sponsor of the show, we have both types of members in our membership. And for us, rather than worry about those types of technical things, we just observe, can you make a living on it? Because the point of our organization is to support farmers, and to support a farm means you got to make a living so you can pay your bills, send your kids to school, all those things. And so we're more blind to the our definition of sustainability is, can I make a living?
Yes.
Right? Makes sense. So we don't, generally speaking, I've never heard in any of our discussions as a farm group that one is better than the other. It's just, can you make a living, and don't break the law, and be consistent with whatever society wants.
And what are you good at?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what talents do you have that fall into what part of what food production?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may be better at driving a tractor than you are fixing it.
Yeah, and some people are gifted with machinery or with livestock. I went to see Temple Grandin speak. You know her? She's a...
Yes.
Yeah, you know what? I saw her speak in Stratford. It was the best thing going. Her claim is that, I think it's only like 15% of the population has a natural ability with livestock, with animals.
15.
They get it. They understand. Yeah. And you know, it's sad to see, and you have too, I've seen it, where a frustrated dog owner is using their hand to hit their dog and yelling at their dog. They obviously have no idea, no idea whatsoever how to handle an animal. Because the animal doesn't understand English. It doesn't understand that the hand is supposed to be for reaffirming, not striking.
Yes.
And so when Temple Grandin, a world-recognized expert in humane handling of animals and understanding animal behavior, makes that observation, it just makes you wonder whether we shouldn't be licensing pet ownership. You know?
Well, Temple also, you know, she's a very special and fantastic individual in her own right.
Yeah, the autism. Yes. Yeah, that's just amazing. Yeah,
and the fact that she's been able to function with that, that is absolutely incredible.
You know, and what a great conference they put on. Typically, you know, in the afternoon session, she'll speak to humane treatment of animals, livestock, that sort of thing, and in the evening, a whole different crowd comes in the meeting hall and they talk about autism and what's new research, how functioning in autism and so on. I like to do it. They actually had a movie, and it got an Academy Award, and it was about her life.
Yes, Claire Dane starred her. Yes.
Did you see it?
I didn't see it, but I saw the award show, highlights of the award show, where Claire Danes was accepting the trophy, giving her speech, and Temple rushed on stage and grabbed the microphone.
No.
And gave thanks, you know, herself, to her parents and such.
Oh, that's, I wish I would have seen that. Anyway, that's another, that's really cool, listen to her speak, and I'm glad I went over for that. So I guess we'll call it today's show just about done, and thanks for listening in, folks. Hope you enjoyed our show, a little bit of everything. And Barclay, thanks again for coming out, and hopefully you'll be able to come out next week. I got guests lined up for all kinds of things, but oh my goodness, it's so hard to schedule people's busy lives. But I think we're doing pretty good here, and come on in as long as you can and sit in with some of our other guests. It's just a hoot, and you're getting real good at this. So with that, thanks so much.
No, thanks for having me.
And we'll call it a wrap for today's show, episode 36 on January 22nd. It's the Agriculture Show. It's your host, Jeff Steger. We'll play out a few songs, and you'll recognize this one. See you next week.
Well, life on the farm, a kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy to me can't hack. Early to rise, early in the sack. I thank God I'm a country boy. Well, a simple kind of life never did me no harm. Raising me a family and working on the farm. Days are all filled with the needs of country charm. Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a griddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. When the work's all done and the sun's setting low, pull out the fiddle and the rosin up the bow. Kids are all asleep, so I keep the cattle low. And thank God I'm a country boy. I'd play a solid guitar all day if I could, but the Lord and my wife wouldn't take it very good. So I fiddle when I can, work when I should. And thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle.
coming up like a cake's on the griddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, but a riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. Woo! Life of diamonds or jewels, I never was one of them money hungry fools. Rather have my fiddle and my farming tools. Thank God I'm a country boy. Yeah, city folk driving in a black limousine. A lot of sad people thinking that's a mighty keen. Son, let me tell you now exactly what I mean. Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fire wife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the fiddle. Life ain't nothing but a fun about a riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. Woo-hoo! He died, took me by the hand and me close to his side. Said, live a good life, play my fiddle with pride. And thank God you're a country boy. Well, my daddy taught me young how to hunt and how to whittle. Taught me how to work and play a tune on the fiddle. Taught me how to love and how to give just a little. And thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, but a riddle. I'm a country boy.